Well, Chairperson, for now at least it's a draft. I mean, because we just been informed today to say we must submit tomorrow. Then,
okay,
there was no time that at least we'll communicate with our counterpart. Okay. No, let's just leave it as it is.
Yeah.
And if we're gonna organize join, then at least we'll do so.
Okay. All right. I think it's fine because that is the sense that I could get.
Good afternoon, Chair.
Hey, Chairperson.
Yes.
Good afternoon, two chairpersons.
Aye. Ambassador.
Are you 036105 now, Honorable Dango? I was wondering who this 036105.
May I request Ms. Caroline Mtembo, the parliamentary officer for the Department of Public Service and Administration, just to confirm if CPIS delegates they have already logged in so that they will have to
continue to chat. Good afternoon, honorable members.
Hi, ma'am.
We are indeed here. It's Lydia Subukedi from the Center for Public Service Innovation.
Oh, great. Great. I want to believe that the community secretary is happy now.
Yeah, no, I am happy because I've been informed that Ms. Mavikana and Ms. Wokedi will be the one that will be beaming the presentation. So I've already made them a co-host.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's right. Is the DM already? Do you have the DM?
Caroline?
Good afternoon, honorable members. The DM will join shortly. She's just wrapping up another meeting, but she'll be joining now.
Okay.
Yeah.
You tell us when you are ready.
Honorable Chair, I hope I will be guided when to beam the presentation.
Yes, yes, we will definitely do that.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Yes, Chairman.
I am a whip.
Hey, yeah, you love the suits, man. I can. You must go to the community chair.
I'm talking to the community. I'm engaging with the public.
I hear you're not working. You are not on the ground. They could join our houses.
I think we are ready now to start. good afternoon, honorable members. Let me start the meeting by extending a word of welcome to all of you. We are meeting as the Select Committee on Trade, Select Committee on Transport, Public Works and Infrastructure, and Public Service and Administration to receive the works of the center for public service innovation. You remember that at the beginning of the previous financial year, we met with the team where they presented to us the strat plan and also the APP. So basically today's meeting is mainly to get a sense in terms of progress made around the indicators and the outcome in terms of performance. We will therefore be looking forward to hear from the center. Made to understand that the delegation will be led by the Deputy Minister Chikunga, together with the delegation will be Ms. Bukedi, that the chance will also be Ambikwa, then the ministerial staff and advisors that is what I was told. So we will be guided in terms of whether the PM has logged in already. I can see that the DM has logged in. Let me extend a special word of welcome to her. And given the role that she's playing in the department, and also this entity, that's one of the entities that is accountable directly to the Department of Public Service and Administration. Allow me to give over to the Deputy Minister to give an opening remarks with regard to the work of the center. Over to you, Deputy Minister Chikunga.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will switch off the camera for maybe better reception. Let me acknowledge you, Chairperson, and members, honorable members of the Select Committee. Also acknowledge the acting executive director for CPSI, senior managers from CPSI. Chairperson, the Center for Public Service in Public Sector Innovation as government component has been instrumental in entrenching a culture of innovation in government and other relevant national and provincial and local agencies. As you will know, Chairperson, the CPSI's mandate directly supports the National Development Plan in building an effective, efficient, and development-oriented public sector and an empowered and inclusive citizenship. I'm certain that members will agree with me that COVID-19 enabled us to identify systematic challenges, weaknesses, which required innovative solutions to fast-track service delivery. It compelled us to find new ways of operating whilst giving rise to the need for innovation and technology more than ever before, particularly in the public service and, of course, in other sectors as well. There have been various innovative solutions that have been replicated throughout provinces as a result of the work of the CPSI. This has highlighted the importance of an ongoing practice of innovation as a critical part of transformation and reform in the public sector. It has enabled us to find new cost-effective ways of adding value to the existing systems and practices and to replace them if need be. So, honorable members, the purpose of the meeting today is invited by the Honorable Select Committee is for the CPSI to present their annual report and performance information to the Select Committee. Honorable members, I'm pleased to report that the CPSI achieved a clean audit for the year 2019-20 financial year. In terms of their performance, they achieved 75% of their annual targets out of 8 targets for the year, under which they could not achieve 2 of the targets. This could have been as a result of challenges they have been experiencing, which the acting executive director will explain. Let me at this moment, Chair, hand over to the acting executive director to present on the performance information. I thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Deputy Minister, for that overview in terms of the work, and thereby also laying the foundation for the executive director to proceed with the presentation. Over to you, Executive Director Wegedi.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and Deputy Minister and colleagues. Thank you for the opportunity. I'll just switch on the video for 2 seconds so that you can put the voice to the face. Thank you so much. I hope that my presentation is visible from your side.
It is visible.
Thank you. It's not a long presentation, but in the presentation, I will cover a few things. Obviously, the Deputy Minister has already indicated the report of the Auditor General will give an overview of the performance for the annual, the year 2019-2020, zoom into highlights, more into the targets that were not achieved, human resource information, and touch briefly on the annual financial statements. As indicated, yes, we did. This is our third clean audit, for the past 3 years, we've been achieving a clean audit under very strenuous circumstances, as we are a very small outfit. Currently, we have about 26 field posts, as we have some vacancies. The next slide just indicates our achievement. Our targets are quite small, as you'll see from the budget, that the budget as well is not big. So we managed to achieve 75% of our targets, missing 2 targets, but I'll give more details around that. On this slide, it just shows under program 1, but I would like to highlight that by the end of the financial year, 100%, we have implemented 100% of external audit recommendations from the previous financial year. So by 31st of March, we didn't have anything that was outstanding for based on what the AG raised as concerns. The 2 targets that were not achieved are those, but I will elaborate more on them in the next couple of slides. If you allow me, Chairperson, to proceed, I will go back to this slide in more detail later on. But some of the slides that we targets that were achieved are those. The following slides will also give more information on the slides or on the targets that were achieved.
Sorry, Chair.
sorry for disturbing the executives. Can we have the slide bigger? If the executive director can do slideshow.
Okay, sir.
Put it on slideshow. I hope I'll be able to do that. It's not on slideshow.
No, you just move up your cursor.
Okay.
Up. No. Yeah. You can see slideshow. There is a slideshow. It's written slideshow. Up.
Up. I don't see. Up, oh, up. Yes, there. Yeah. Okay.
And then you go, and then you go to from current slide. Current slide. Up.
Okay.
You see current slide. Current slide from current slide.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you so much for the lesson. I learned something new today. Thank you. Thank you so much. Now I need to know how to move the slides. Okay, I'll use the shift button. Just to give you more detail on the tables that I've just shown you. Under program 2, as indicated by the DM, this is what we're trying to do to try and improve service delivery through innovation. And we do that in various ways. One way that we do it is through the replication program. With the replication program, just to give you a bit of background, what we do is that we identify solutions, innovative solutions, that we then take from one setting to the other, from one hospital to the other, or from one province to the other. So in the year under review, 1920, we actually successfully replicated a maternal health records project, which we found in Prince Nishien Hospital in KZN, and then we replicated it in Bethakook. We would like to replicate wider, but we are limited by capacity, things that I will touch on later on, and also by budget in terms of how much we can do. But this project that we replicated, actually, if you ask in the health sector, maternal health records, similar to records of accidents, they actually disappear in hospitals. Because most of the litigations that come through, it will either be through a maternal death or the death of the baby during birth and so forth. So we zoomed into maternal health records based on those risks that when the file is lost, and the hospital or government is taken to task legally, you find that we are found wanting as a hospital because the maternal health record would be nowhere to be found. So this innovation was not a very advanced innovation, but it secured. It makes sure that maternal, you can actually trace who took the file and when was it brought back and so forth, just to make sure that if there's litigation relating to that file, we are able to trace where the records are. So that's one that we replicated successfully in that particular year. And under research and development of solutions, as I indicated, we missed two targets. The one target, we couldn't develop any new solutions because we had a solution that we were working on with Home Affairs, which took longer than we anticipated. So we had to zoom into that Home Affairs and make sure that it's actually completed. And sometimes innovation projects, life cycle, don't fit within 1 year. That's one of our challenges that we face, that when you deal with an innovation, sometimes it can take 6 months for you to move from development to a full solution. In other instances, it actually takes years in terms of finding a piloting and then finding that solution is ready to be implemented. As it is now, even in the current year, we are still working with Home Affairs. It's only now in 2021 that we are able to pilot. So it shows that the life cycle of an innovation project actually doesn't fit within the reporting requirements. Sometimes we are late because of things that unintended consequences when you try to pilot a solution. One can also use currently with the vaccine for the pandemic. Scientists have been working up till now. There are some that say the vaccine can work for this variant, but it won't work for this variant, and we're still trying to find solutions. So it's a very good example of how difficult it is to bring an innovation from a development stage to full scale. It's very, very challenging. over the past few conservative years, we've been supporting youth digital skills. We work with organizations like Geek Culture. I'm not sure honorable members you are aware of this organization, a youth ICT development organization. We hold hackathons for them to come up with solutions, but we still have a challenge. Solutions that are coming out of this area, working with youth, it's very difficult to bring them on board in the public service because of various things. One is supply chain rules. When you procure anything in government, you are supposed to get 3 quotations of, if it's a tender, then you must put it out on tender. But then you meet a young entrepreneur who's working on a solution which is still in development stage. It's not possible for you to ask for 3 quotations of something that's still being developed. It's not like when you purchase a bottle of water, you know you have 500 mils, it must be distilled and. But with development solutions, it's very difficult for one to define them. So it's a challenge. Yes, we support them, but we are still talking to Treasury in terms of how do we bring this into the public service. Working again with the Department of Digital Technologies, they are also facing the same problem. I think there's somewhere they are working on a document of how to make sure that we're able to take these innovations in government. We have ways of trying to do that, but it's a very tedious process where we work with, for instance, the Innovation Hub that is based in Gauteng. We enter into a memorandum of understanding with them. We give them money for them to source these solutions from the youth. But it takes time because, again, you are limited by finance prescripts and so forth. Innovation also strives on partnerships. And under this point, I just want to emphasize that we work with, as I said, the Innovation Hub, but we also work with the National Advisory Council on Innovation, which is a formation of the Department of Science and Innovation. We actually did a rapid study with them to see the status of public sector innovation in the country. But in the coming financial year, we will be actually doing an in-depth study with them. The first one was a desktop research just to throw feelers in terms of what is happening in that space. We also provide solutions, as I said, to try and improve service delivery. Yeah, I want to give an example, honorable members, that we work with frontline departments so that they can leverage innovation. I'll just give you a current example where CPS has been working with the Department of Correctional Services for quite a number of years. And in the past year or so, they actually took some of the innovations that we shared with them in the e-learning space. They actually implemented those solutions even before the pandemic, where they are rendering some of their lessons to the prisoners through e-learning platforms. So by the time the COVID hit, they were actually ahead because they were already using e-learning. That's an example of how CPSIs provide institutional support to departments to leverage innovation. Not an easy process as well, but we do try as much as we can. In terms of internationally, we work with organizations like the UN, OECD as well, very strong partnerships with them where we share knowledge and we share innovations and so forth. We also have internally innovation knowledge platforms. When we talk about innovation and knowledge management go together, because you'll agree with me, members, that if you have knowledge about how you can solve one problem, if you don't share it with other people in the space, they may end up seeking solutions while they don't know that you have actually solved the problem. So we use our innovation platforms to make sure that we inculcate the culture and practice of innovation. We share innovation approaches, thought leadership from across the globe, solutions that we come across, so that we avoid reinventing the wheel. Just a snapshot of such, in November 2019, we held a conference, but this conference we said we don't want a talk shop. So what we did, we introduced mini technic clinics that focused on a field called design thinking and then foresight skills. So we had, the theme was public sector innovation, design thinking and foresight to accelerate the achievement of government's seven priorities. And out of that conference, actually, public servants became interested to an extent that in the next slide, as I will indicate, we actually now are hosting design thinking skills workshop for public servants. Another program that we have is the awards program, which runs the whole year. Here, I want to emphasize that we use our program, the awards program, to find some of these innovations, because it's very difficult for you to know what is happening in KZN. But when you ask them to submit their innovations, then you are able to go through them and see what is coming out of different provinces. We award them, but later on, we take this project into a replication program. So our awards program doesn't end with the ceremony where people are giving trophies and we say bye-bye, we'll see you next year. We actually take those projects into the year, the following year, as part of our annual targets to make sure that we replicate those solutions. We also have a journal that we are now publishing online, as I indicated, public sector innovation workshops, which now focuses on giving public servants design thinking skills so that they can start solving their own problems. As indicated, those two targets were not achieved. I just wanted to emphasize the last bullet, that innovation that we're trying to replicate. Unfortunately, it was a special project that we focused on because it targeted children with disabilities, children with cerebral palsy. This innovation is physiotherapists at Paragwana came up with what they call standing boxes. Standing boxes are there in the market, but very pricey, anything from 3,000. So it leaves out people from disadvantaged areas. So the physios then decided, why don't we find a partner that can assist us to develop much cheaper standing boxes so that we can reach children with disabilities that are from disadvantaged families. Unfortunately, the only reason why this was not achieved is that there was a delay in manufacturing, and these standing boxes were only reached the Free State replication site during the second quarter of 2020-21. They were supposed to deliver by the 31st of March 2020, but unfortunately, we were caught up with a delay in manufacturing. In terms of the state of the human resources in the department, for 1920, we had a staff turnover of about 6%. As indicated, one appointment, one transfer out, and five contracts ending, and one secondment ending. And currently, we have 26 posts that are filled, and we have two employees additional to the establishment. Within the year 1920, unfortunately, our vacancy rate increased to 13.5% compared to 1819. This is because of the four vacant posts that we couldn't fill. Minister then indicated that we need to reposition the organization. So we held on filling of posts so that we can review the organizational structure and see whether we can increase capacity internally so that we are able to carry our mandate. I must say, honorable members, the targets that were not achieved, those units are very thin. In terms of replication, we have only one person who runs with replication. And in terms of solution development, we have one person. So it's very challenging for them to be able to achieve their targets because we are very, very, very thin on the ground. One key post that's been vacant is that of the executive director. As you can see, it's been vacant from the 1st of October 2018. There have been secondments, and from February 2020, I've been acting in the position to date. And we are hopeful that before the end of the financial year, this critical post will be filled to allow the executive director to move the organization forward. Some of the information that we'd like to share is that in terms of employee performance management, we've done everything that we're supposed to do within the timelines. ICT capacity remains a challenge. As an innovation organization, this is a concern for us. And we will be entering into a memorandum of understanding with the TPSA to increase our ICT capacity, because again, currently we only have one person to support projects in terms of ICT and also to support desktop support. So you can imagine if this resource is sick in ICU and we have downtime, then we are in trouble as an organization. So we're trying our best to make sure that we mitigate against this. In the proposed new structure, which we are still seeking approval to have PPSA to look at our proposed structure, we've actually increased capacity in program 2 and also increased propose that we have more posts in ICT to mitigate against all this risks. In terms of finances, very briefly, honorable members, our expenditure, yes, it was almost 78%. Under compensation of employees, we had a 953 underspending because of all those vacancies. So we had to give the money back. Those four posts, including the vacant post of the executive director, then it cost underspending in this compensation of employees. Under goods and services, expenditure as well was very low for the following reasons. CPSI used to have its own offices in Centurion. We then relocated to the PPSA Batopili building where we are. And that money, that 4 million plus, we couldn't use it in that financial year because we had moved here and we were initially not paying rent. So we had a save, I don't know whether to call it a saving or not, of about 4 million, which led to the lower than envisaged spending. Because we wanted to do certain things, like to do tenant installation, to upgrade infrastructure, but because there was a pending organizational review, we held back on those expenditure items until we are sure where the CPSI is going. So we had a saving where to return the money. Computer services as well, when we moved to this building, a couple of months up to July, we actually were doing our transactions at CETA. So we had to use CETA offices. So CETA was not charging us for this transaction. So there was a bit of saving as well in that instance. Travel and accommodation, we also made a saving there. Our award ceremony and the conference were combined in Gauteng, so it led to more savings. We also saved a lot on non-employee foreign travel, as we used to host a workshop with the UN, but unfortunately, because of loss of capacity, we had to let go of that expenditure. During the 2019 awards ceremony, we didn't hold the finalist workshop, also led to some saving. I must say, honorable members, moving on, we actually, if it were not for COVID in the following year, our expenditure could have been different. But in this year, those were the cost drivers that led to us not spending as intended. We held back on the revamping of the website as well. We published our journal online. So it led to more savings. Some of the savings are like the transfers and subsidies, machineries and equipment, an amount of 4.79 was low. The expenditure was actually lower than anticipated. I think in this slide, it's just, you know, finance stuff where it shows where the savings, what is the spending compared to program 1 and program 2. As you can see, program 1, 70%, and program 2, the expenditure was slightly higher than program one. This just expands on those economic classification in terms of the expenditure. And here we're just unpacking under program 1. Those are the three units in program 1. The under expenditure was actually in corporate resource management. We also have a vacancy there. Under that sub-program. In program 2, the expenditure was not that bad, as you can see, above 82% in the core program, which is public sector innovation. But obviously, because corporate resource management was lower, it actually brought the expenditure to 77.7 percent for the year. Thank you.
Thank you, Executive Director, for that presentation. I will now get indication from another members in terms of the engagement with the presentation. But indeed, you must be commended for the 3 years of clean audit. I think that's a step in the right direction. Keep the good work up. I've noted the hand of Honorable Matebula. Over to you, Honorable Matebula.
Thank you very much, Chair. My first question will be, what is your department plan to lead in the innovation and development in South Africa that will lead to the large-scale industrialization or change the way in which the state delivers service? As we speak now, manufacturing continues to decline with millions of people facing retrenchment in all sectors. Number two will be, what is your department plan to implement the construction of high technologies institute, which will teach innovation and research on technology with the aim of innovating technological instruments and gadgets in South Africa? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matebula. I've noted Honorable Khai also. Over to you, Honorable Khai.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and also thanks to the DM for the opening remarks, and also to the Acting Executive Director for the presentation. So let me start also on the issue of the Acting Executive Director. Maybe the DM can, if she can assure us, because the Executive Director is saying that by the end of the year, we will have a full-time Executive Director. We need the assurance from the DM that will definitely take place. Since 2018, without having an accounting office, I think it's unacceptable. These secondments from presidency, secondment from the department, it's unacceptable. We really need a full-time person in that particular position. Secondly, with regard to the performance indicators, let me first start with the administration. We would like a situation where the administration targets are broken down. To just have a performance indicator in the form of developing policies, and then when you've developed those policies, then you said that you've achieved. We want those policies to be broken down. For example, in terms of human resource, I know there's a section that deals with human resource, but we want those to be brought to under administration. They can stay there under human resource when you want to deal to give more details under human resource, but they should also be under administration with specific performance indicators and targets. For example, with regard to the vacancy rate, the fact that it's just in the under human resource section, there are no performance indicators. It just says the vacancy rate is 13 and you don't know what is the target of the entity, where does it want to go to, which target from that statement, because now it's not being measured, it's just there as a 13%. But also if you look at the PowerPoint presentation of the executive director, it talks about 6% of staff turnover. But if you read the book, the annual report, the book itself, it talks about 13%. So we need the clarity, which one is right, which one is wrong. Because the book says 13%, but the PowerPoint presentation says the 6%. So we really need clarity with regard to that. Also further, that's why I'm saying that those targets, I mean, those issues around the administration need to be broken into performance indicators. We need to know what is the target, for example, with regard to women in the senior management positions. We need to know what targets you have around the issue of the ICT. What targets are you having? So that you don't just say there's a challenge on the ICT. We don't even know what that challenge is. So that is another question, Chair, that the executive director must tell us what challenge is she referring to. Because in the report, the book, and also the PowerPoint presentation, it just says there are challenges in the ICT without exactly explaining what are these challenges. So we need further information with regard to what are these challenges and what is it being done to correct those challenges. But also with regard to employees with disabilities, we need to know what are the targets and whether those targets have been achieved. But also the other one is the government 30-day period for payment of service providers, if the service providers are paid within the stipulated 30-day payment period by government. So we need to know all that information so that it's not only just couched under human resource policies. That's why we need to have those broken down into performance indicators with targets. And also the monitoring and the disclosure by the SMS and designated employees with regard to the possible conflict of interest. We will need to know whether there are any disclosures, how many of the managers have signed those disclosures. Chair, in the book, there's a talk about the shifting of funds, which amounts to 207,000. It talks about a damage to a hired car. We need more explanation with regard to why was this hired car not insured? Why now the entity has to pay about 6,000 for this hired car? But also there's also another claim that was paid to an employee. There's no indication as to what this claim was all about. Chair, and I think we need more information with regard to the moratorium on the employment as to why there was this moratorium on filling of the vacancies, which are funded. That's why now there's the underspending on human resource. We would have understood if these were not funded posts, but these are funded posts. But then there was a moratorium as to why those posts were not filled. I'm interested under a public sector innovation program on the issue of the info at CPISI, where it is used to lodge complaints. And then those complaints are forwarded to the executive member
I assume that the executive member at a national, provincial, and also at a local government. I would be interested to know whether there is a feedback from those executive members back to the CPI, the CP, IS, so that also feedback to the complainants. I would really like to know if that happens. Just a minute, Chair. On the Audit and Risk Committee, I there was a report from the acting chairperson, Mr. Pumla Mzizi. I just want to know why is she acting? Is there no full-time chairperson for the Audit and Risk Committee? Thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to ask the question. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Khaish. Honorable Tim Brasseter, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Chair. Chair, I must apologize for joining the meeting late. We had some power issues here in Itagwini in my area, so I had no signal. I did manage to catch most of the presentation there, and I want to thank the presenter for the work that is being done. I think that they must be commended for the clean financial record. But the questions I want to ask are very simple, Chair. They just relate to the implementation of the Public Administration Act of 2014. I see there are still challenges with work being done by officials with the state. So officials doing business with the state. Because one of the strategic objectives is to build up the level of ethics in the civil service. But we still have the problem of officials doing work with the state. And I think in one of our previous engagements, we established that only one person, since that act was passed, has actually been prosecuted. Only one. So I'd love to get the impressions on the one hand, trying to build up an ethical civil service, but on the other hand, what seems to be a climate of no consequence whatsoever, how that actually works in terms of getting it, and would the entity's hand be strengthened when, on the one hand, you're teaching ethics, but on the other hand, you are actually... You know, the students, as it were, know that something will happen if ethics are breached, and if how they if they can comment on that environment and how we need to fast track the mechanisms of the Public Administration Act. The other thing that I want to raise, and I must admit I raise this all the time, and I will keep banging the drum until finally we get some sort of action, is the establishment of the ethics unit, a very long-worded integrity and ethics, professional ethics unit within the Department of Public Service and Administration, and what role this entity is playing in terms of getting that that unit up and running so that we can actually implement what we are teaching students about ethics, we can actually implement it on the ground. Thank you, Chair. That's all for now. Thank you.
Honorable Mushodi, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to the GM. Let me start, Honorable Chairperson, to applaud the department about the clean audit for 3 years. My first question, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to add on the issue that was raised by Honorable Khai on the issue of acting executive director. If maybe it's possible to the GM, to give us the time frame, because I think it's of concern to us if the department is having this high position in acting. The second question, Honorable Chairperson, is on the issue of the mental record file that has been lost. I just want to check if it's possible how many files did this cover that maybe this file was lost in the department chairperson? On the issue of 26 posts filled by department, if maybe they can just tell us amongst these 26 posts filled, how many people, how many women in that post, and how many youth, and how many disabled people, Honorable Chairperson. I think the most question was asked by Honorable Khai, the issue of the vacancy rate. For us, it's a concern. I'm not going to even repeat it, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks for now.
Thank you, Honorable Mshodi, for that, for those questions to the team. Let me ascertain as to whether are there any further questions from Honorable members. Maybe just two from my side.
Honorable Chair, seem to have lost you.
Thank you. My apology for that. I just want to ask the team to elaborate further on the 2019 highlights. There is a referral to the continuous support to young people with regard to digital skills development through hackathons. I think it will be important for young people across the country just to get a sense what does hackathons entail, so that at least there is an appreciation from the young people that indeed there is a clear illustration on the part of the government to bring them on board in terms of the information and the communication technology. The second point relates to the emphasis that was raised around the importance of awards, particularly with regard to inviting provinces to put to the fore the innovation program. I'm interested to get a sense in terms of just in a nutshell, what were those initiatives in terms of innovation from the provinces and K, and then just to get a sense from the center in terms of its broader approach to also bringing on board the local governments here to this innovations, particularly given the importance of innovation to improving the public sector. But more than that, the support to strengthen this year, has there been any interaction with the center, with SALGA? Are there any interaction probably with some municipalities? The last one relates to the challenges that you raised around the capacity and the memorandum of agreement between the TKC and the Center for Innovation. How far is that? Is the implementation of that MOU, particularly with regard to the capacity challenge that you have raised? Because I suspect this one definitely the DM will have to give clarity on, because you have raised ICT capacity as a challenge, and the expectation is that from your presentation, the MOU between the center and the department will be used as a platform to sort of bridge this gap of capacity challenge. Over to you, DM and the team.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes, Tim.
I'm terribly sorry, Chair. I'm being very rude. I just want to know if I could possibly ask one further question that I forgot.
No problem.
If
no
I
problem.
May, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I'll be very quick. Chair, just to the presenters. I understand obviously that great strides are being made in terms of educating and training and skilling up existing officials. But does this entity at some point envisage a future where, and I compare this to a country like Malaysia, where if you want to enter the civil service, you must have a minimum level of academic qualification. In other words, there is actually I'm not sure if it's a diploma course or even a degree that you actually require to enter the civil service. Obviously, that cannot be done right now because we have so many people in the civil service. But do we foresee a future where maybe 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, if a young person wants to actually enter the civil service, they first have to actually study to be a civil servant. And then only may they actually enter the civil service. Could we just get comment on that, please? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Tim, for that question. Maybe just the last point from my side. One of the targets that was not met relates to that program of, I think it was attributed to putting too much emphasis on the Home Affairs program, if I'm not mistaken. I think the reason why I'm attracted to this point is informed by every time when I pass Home Affairs offices in Kuruman, in the Northern Cape provinces, from 7 o'clock right up to 3, you will see a long queues of people from the villages queuing just to apply for either ID birth certificate or death certificate. I want to get a sense in terms of how will this Home Affairs innovative program assist in terms of mitigating the queue on the line, because that is the sense that I get the idea is to sort of deal with some of those challenges. Then the last point at the provincial level, particularly from the premier's offices across all provinces, which mainly will be the center where innovations across all departments will be coordinated. I'm interested to get a sense in terms of what is your plan with regard to your interaction with provincial departments, particularly to ensure that across all provinces, this need for innovation is driven. I know that from the province where I come from, the premier always talk about a modern growing province with innovation at the center of it. And amongst them was for the first time this year application and registration of students, application of pupils and learners were done on online, and this to a certain extent assisted our committees from queuing from midnight when opening for application is now. Available for applicants. Thank you, GF and the team.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I will respond to the easiest questions, and the Executive Director will respond to others. Chair, let me explain that